Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Tomorrow Life Sciences. Ever wondered how and where your frozen eggs and embryos are stored? They are kept in tanks called dewars. Inside each tank, hundreds of eggs and embryos are submerged in liquid nitrogen. They're identified with tiny handwritten or printed labels, and the clinic manages and monitors them manually. This part of the IVF lab hasn't been updated in decades and also hasn't benefited from technology or innovation. That's where life sciences company Tomorrow comes in. Tomorrow has created the world's first and only automated platform for the management, identification, and storage of frozen human eggs and embryos. What does this mean? Tomorrow's technology replaces handwritten labels with sophisticated digital tracking, which creates an unbreakable digital link between the specimens and the patient. It also automates a huge part of the process, vastly reducing the risk of mistakes and human error. Finally, it monitors the safety of those frozen eggs and embryos 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Tomorrow's state-of-the-art technology gives patients and clinics peace of mind that those precious, irreplaceable frozen eggs and embryos are safe and protected. Tomorrow is being rapidly adopted by a host of clinics across the United States, creating a new and improved standard of care, and will be available in clinics in the UK this year. To find out more, visit tmrw.org. Links in the show notes. Hello there. How the devil are you? It has been a while, hasn't it? But I am so glad to be back with series 6 of the Finally Pregnant podcast. 6, can you imagine? I want to say a huge, huge thank you to Tomorrow Life Sciences for making it possible. Anyone who knows me likely knows my views on IVF and all fertility treatment, to be honest. It is that we need more research and more answers. We're in 2022 and I feel like there is still so much more we need to know and need to improve upon. And I am really pleased to say that Tomorrow are one of the companies doing this. I went to see them in their London office a few weeks ago, and the technology they have developed to bring egg and embryo storage up to date is incredible. A little bit more on that later on in this series, though, as I'll be chatting to their founder, Tara, who herself is an IVF mum as well. So she's got that passion to kind of innovate and create. And also she has a complete understanding of what it feels like to be on the other side as well. And that mix, I just think, is really very, very special. And that's just, yeah, one of the reasons I am delighted to be working with them on this series. What else has been going on? Well, as many of you know, we had our final round of treatment last summer and it didn't work. If anyone wants to hear me cry my way through the days that followed that result, head back to the last couple of episodes from the last series. There's no other way to put it other than to say the end of last year was really tough for me. It really was. We had to come to terms with our journey being over. And that was a lot to deal with. But having spent lots of time with a counsellor and working through a lot of tools that I have bagged up in my armoury over the last decade, let's be honest, I am back on an even footing and I am feeling, well, great, to be honest, you know. I would, of course, have loved to have given Ren a sibling. Like, that goes without saying. But it's not meant to be. So I can either wallow in that, and there are moments that I still do that, don't get me wrong, but I can sit in that continuously and spend my entire life comparing to other people who have got, you know, more than one child, or, you know, children with siblings, or I can look at my family and know just how blooming lucky I am to have them. Like, really, it is so special. And I want to do everything in my power to enjoy that as much as possible. like I said, you know, there are good days and there are bad ones, but I'm more than happy and very content with what I've got. And that is a really, really good place to be. If you find yourself in this stage at any point of your journey and really want to kind of find some contentment, please, please do get in touch. There is support out there. And, you know, like now I'm working as a coach, which is something that happened last year, which I'm really excited about. And I have also created a program to help people find contentment, just like I have done. I feel like there's a lot to cover in this episode because it's the first one back. So I'm not going to go into loads and loads of detail, but there's a link in the show notes to my website. So head there if you want to find out more. And then I will share more later on in the series. Coming though to today's guest, and I am talking to the wonderful Amber Itso, who is pregnant after IVF. Amber is the host of the Am I Overreacting podcast, which I love that name. She was also the brains and the brawn behind the Fight for IVF campaign that victoriously meant Cambridgeshire and Peterborough CCG reinstated one free round of IVF for those living in that area. Now, that is no mean feat. And as you may or may not know, there are CCGs in the UK that don't offer any treatment still, which is just, oh, so the fact that Amber campaigned and changed that just goes to show what a powerhouse she is. When we spoke, Amber was just over 14 weeks pregnant, and she openly shares the ups and downs of what that time has been like. There are a couple of things in particular that I want to pick out that we talked about. One of those is affirmations. Amber had looked, like sought for pregnancy affirmations to help support her through her pregnancy. Now, I want you to know that I have created a pack of pregnancy affirmation cards specifically for those who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. You can head to my website and find them. It's a pack of 20 cards. And like I say, it's based on affirmations that I used and ones that I have talked through with so many people over the years. So last year I thought, right, I need to pull this together. And so they are available for you to buy from my website. The other thing we talked about was the handover from fertility clinic to NHS care. Now, this is a big one. And in fact, I did a survey on this a little while back now. And I know it's something that people struggle with because, you know, we're just thinking, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. We've never looked at what NHS maternity care looks like what's a booking in appointment? How do I get in touch with my midwife? Like all of these questions. When you join the Hangout, which is my community for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss, you'll get access to a back catalogue of speaker podcasts. So it's kind of like a special set of podcast episodes just for members. And one of the speakers is the fabulous infertile midwife, Sophie. Now, she is a midwife, an NHS midwife. And what she does during that episode is really special. She talks us through the entire kind of NHS maternity pathway. And it's a really nice way to find out more, you know? So yeah, head over again to the website where you can find out more about the Hangout. Like I said, I feel like I'm like cramming loads into this, so I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to stop. And I am just going to say, please, please enjoy my chat with Amber. She is a fabulous, fabulous individual. All the links to find Amber are in the show notes. If you are listening, please do a screenshot or take a photo and tag me at Finally Pregnant and Amber at amber.itso, and that's I-Z-Z-O. We'd love, love, love to hear what you think of the episode. And yeah, I'm going to hand over now. So I will see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye. Before we head into today's chat, I want to remind you just how important it can be to talk and share our stories with people who get it. That's just one of the reasons I created this very podcast. And you already know how important that is because you're here to listen to people whose experiences you relate to. But I want to give everyone the opportunity to talk. And that is just one of the reasons I launched The Hangout, a community specifically for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. When you join, you'll receive a free meditation, access to a 24/7 community, invitations to exclusive live podcast recordings with experts across all areas of pregnancy and parenting, a full and growing resource library, support groups, discounts, and more. Find out more at catstrawbridge.com. I look forward to seeing you there soon. Hi, Amber. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Like we just said, this is my first interview back, so I feel a little bit rusty, but
I feel privileged.
I feel I'm in good hands because you are a podcast host yourself, are you not?
I am, yeah. I wouldn't say the most professional of, but yeah, I am.
We're all making it all up as we go along. That's the way that
just winging it. Yeah.
Totally, absolutely. Totally. So it would be amazing. Obviously, I've kind of introduced you in my preamble, but it would be amazing for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, hello, my name is Amber Rizzo. I am finally pregnant. I'm just short of 15 weeks and it has been quite the journey to get here. My husband and I were trying for around 7 years and we have had 3 fresh cycles of IVF, the first 2 which were just disastrous. So a lot of testing, a lot of hard work and tears and all the rest of it has gone into it. So yeah, so that was kind of our journey, if you like. I was diagnosed with blocked fallopian tubes, which I had removed, PCOS, and we had male factor as well. So we were a real big bag of infertility, which was great. But we live in Cambridgeshire, and when we received our diagnosis, they had not long taken IVF off the NHS where we lived. I have always kind of blogged about my infertility. I've been really, really open about it. I will talk to anybody who will listen about it. And yeah, so when they removed it, I decided that I would start a campaign because I thought it was abysmal. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous how there is such a postcode lottery across the whole country. So I started the Fight for IVF campaign during Fertility Week 2020. I think, was it 2020? Maybe 2019. No, 2020. And yeah, they reinstated it last summer, which was wild as a result of the campaign. And yeah, it led to me getting my 3rd cycle of IVF on the NHS, which has wonderfully resulted in me being pregnant, which still feels really, really weird to say out loud. So hence the hesitation before I say it. But that is me in a nutshell, in a very jumbled nutshell. That's me.
It's quite a huge nutshell. Like there's a lot going on there. And you are, because of the campaigning that you have done, you are a lot of people's heroes, you know, because they will have had access to IVF when it previously wasn't available to them.
Yeah.
And I live under that CCG. I have had one round. I think it must have been before they cut it back that I snuck in there. It wasn't the successful one for me, but that's by the by. But I guess your own hero as well, because this round is a result of that reinstation. What's that word?
I think it's the word.
I'm making it up. It's officially a word. That this round is a result of that free round being reinstated. There you go. That's a better way of saying it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, I don't think the enormity of what actually happened has sunk in. And I don't think it ever will, to be honest. I'm not really someone who can sing my own praises very loudly. And I think I've kind of struggled with that a little bit when, you know, people have messaged me and said that obviously it's worked for them and that has been a direct result of me. And I think, you know, I'm one of these people that I'm a bit of a Chandler Bing and I'll come back with a joke rather than that's really kind of you kind of thing. Like I just struggle with that. So it has been a lot to get my head around, I think. And, you know, like my husband, he's almost embarrassing with it. Like we'll go to a doctor's surgery and they'll say about the fact it was on the NHS or something like that. And he will, can I just say the reason that happened? And, you know, I die with embarrassment every single time.
Go Marco,
but it is lovely. And it's lovely to know that, you know, a lot of people have been able to get IVF when they otherwise like wouldn't have been able to afford it and couldn't afford it and have been trying for a certain amount of time. And, you know, I always think whether it works or not, just having that chance to do that without needing to put your hand in your own pocket is just great. So yeah, it was really, really wild. And I really still to this day cannot believe it actually happened and that they actually did kind of go back on their word and change their policy. And it is, as much as it's, you know, it's not the best policy in the country and they still only offer 1 cycle rather than the 3. The policy is more relaxed than it was when it was in place before. And obviously we managed to get a cycle despite the fact that we'd had 2 private cycles because their cutoff was was the two, which again, wasn't a thing beforehand. If you'd paid for a private cycle, that was it. You weren't having IVF. So it is a really big achievement, and it's something that I am immensely proud of, but something that I still can't quite get my head around the fact actually happened. Like it's very weird.
Well, it is incredible and it is a huge achievement. And yeah, like I guess I speak on behalf of all those people who have access to it. And just to say a huge, huge thank you, because...
You're making me blush.
Well, that's okay. That's all right. You're allowed to blush. But there are places in the country where there is no access at all. And so, as you say, whether or not it works, obviously we always hope that it works. The fact that you have the opportunity to try is huge. So well done to you.
Thank
for
you.
That. Coming now to your pregnancy, like...
Yes.
Can you talk to us about finding out? I guess that's, you know, obviously we all know all of the work that goes into like having those rounds of treatment, and it's just, it's a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And for those who might be listening who haven't necessarily gone through treatment, but understand that long journey to want to hold the baby and the just complete loss at knowing what the long-term outcome is going to be. It's so hard. I was talking to someone just last night in my Path to Contentment program, and it's like you want that crystal ball, don't you? You really need, you just want to know one way or the other whether or not it's going to work, and that way you can kind of start moving forward. But so you've been through all of that and then you find yourself with that positive pregnancy test in front of you.
It was mad, because I think we'd, like I say, you know, we'd had the two cycles beforehand. The first time we didn't even make it to transfer. The second time we had a really, really poor quality embryo to transfer, and that obviously didn't work. We had nothing to freeze. So we kind of, we'd had a bit of an unspoken agreement that this was going to be our last fresh cycle. Like we couldn't keep doing this. And we'd had a completely different protocol. Like everything was flipped on its head. Everything about this cycle was different. And, you know, I get a lot of people say to me, oh, you know, what is it that you changed that made this cycle work? And I'm like, I can't give you an answer here, because we changed everything, you know, from the clinic, the medication, the way that we dealt with it, like everything. So I think it was by far the best cycle that we'd had in terms of the way that I responded, the number of eggs we got, fertilization, everything. It was the first time we'd had anything in the freezer. Like it really was an incredible round. But then you get to the 2 week wait. And I think my mindset the whole way through had been, I was really proud of myself. And I had done so much work between cycle two and cycle three on myself and the way that I dealt with it. And if I'm really honest, I had kind of come to terms with a life without children. And we had kind of started to prepare for, in our heads, when this cycle failed and what we were going to do and what the rest of our lives were going to look like. And I had become really okay with this. And I think, you know, anyone who listens to our podcast will see that the other co-host, Annabelle, actually said to me, you did not prepare for this outcome. And now you're like, oh my God, what do I do now? But during that 2 week wait, I think we got to about day four and all my positivity just went out the window. And I was completely and utterly convinced that it wasn't working. And all my kind of, I say symptoms, and I say that inverted commas, because at that point, you know, most people haven't even missed a period. Like everything you are experiencing is progesterone. It is absolutely not your body, or in 90% of cases anyway. But I think I'd started, everything had kind of dropped off, which is exactly what happened during cycle two. And I started to really feel like I was coming on my period. And I remember one night I got really, really upset because I really wanted chocolate instead of salty things. And I had read online that if you are pregnant, you want salty food. And if your period is coming, you want sweet food. So I was like, that's it. It's done. It's not worked, because I really want a Mars bar and not a packet of crisps. And so after that, I just kind of convinced myself. And I think 2 days before we actually tested, I spent the night just sobbing, and I was in bed really, really, it was horrible. And my poor husband had to sit and watch me. And I just accepted that it hadn't worked. And I woke up the next day like, right, fine. What do we do now? Where do we go? And then obviously the following day we tested, and I have a YouTube channel and I'd filmed our reaction, and I couldn't breathe. Like I was so shocked to see those two lines. And then my husband started just pacing around the room afterwards. And he was like, okay, can we do another one? Because I don't believe it. So we did it again. And I think next like two or three weeks, I did about 20 tests. It was absolutely ridiculous. And it just it was really wild. And it was just like, we opened a salon like 2 days after, my husband's a hairdresser. So 2 days after testing, we'd opened. So everything was so full on at that time that it was really hard to let it sink in. And I just didn't believe it. And I kept believing that something was going to go wrong. But at the same time, it was like this, I can't believe this is happening to us. And I think that was the thing. It was the real disbelief that we had gone through everything that we had gone through to this point. And then suddenly it was on paper, it was over. And I found that really difficult to get my head around. It was okay, what do I do now? Like, how do we do this? How do we cope with this? I've never been here before. I have no idea. I have no control. I felt like I had less control than I did going through IVF because I'd done that before and I'd researched that to death. Whereas this, I had no idea. So it was a really weird time. It was amazing, but a really weird time to try and get your head around. So yeah.
No, I totally get that. And I often talk about it in terms of when we're trying, seeing that positive pregnancy test is the holy grail, isn't it? It really is. Like, that is what we want. That is all we want in that moment. And then we get there and then it's like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? Exactly like you say, you know, like if it's the first time you've been there, you're just like, I haven't prepared for this, you know, your exact words, you know, I don't know what to do now. I don't know where to go. I don't know, you know, hopefully people know about Finally Pregnant. So they're coming straight here and realizing that they are completely normal, that it is, you know, kind of so understandable that you just feel a bit lost because you feel in that transition, you know, transitional kind of space, don't you?
And yeah, for
you're
sure.
almost not ready to believe it, but it's true. So kind of need to believe it, but you can't quite believe it, you know, and that cycle goes on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think what kind of made it worse was, I can't remember what year it was, it must have been about 2016. I actually got a false positive, which is really like, it doesn't happen all that often, but I had got two digital tests and both of them came back positive. And it was just a dodgy batch. Like, it was just obviously telling everybody they were pregnant. It was just fun. And that was like going to the doctors and being told, no, you're absolutely not. Like, this is like, whatever had happened had happened. I think that was another reason why we were so anxious when we got that positive. And it was okay, like, I refused to do digital tests. I wouldn't do blue line tests. Like, everything had to be a pink line. That kind of made the anxiety worse. And it was okay, is this line dark enough? And it just, it really plays with your head, really, really plays with your head. So eventually I did have to like stop buying tests. And my husband was really like, we need to stop doing this because it is driving me crazy. Yeah, it really was such a mind screw. I would usually use a lot stronger word than that, but it was.
Oh, no, knock yourself out. Honestly, that's all good.
It was just totally, yeah, it was so weird and a really anxiety inducing time. But at the same time, a period of life that I will never, ever forget. So yeah, just crazy.
Yeah, special, but yeah, wild, as you say. And talk to us about the kind of 15 weeks since, I guess. I know by the time you know, we're kind of 4 or 5 weeks in, aren't we?
Yeah.
But how has it been? So you shared on social media when you were ready.
Yeah.
How did that feel?
It was really strange, if I'm honest. I'm not sure I was ready to share when I shared. Like, I was kind of, we'd had three scans. So we'd had one at 7 weeks and one at 9 weeks with the clinic. And we'd paid for a private one at 6 weeks. We were meant to have it at six, but for whatever reason, we couldn't get there. So we'd had three scans. So we couldn't have been more reassured than we were. And everything was looking amazing. And, you know, the clinic were really confident that things were going to progress and it was fine. And we'd obviously been discharged. And I think we told our friends, and the only reason we had told our friends prior to that was obviously A, because we didn't want them to find out on social media, but because I was really struggling with that anxiety and feeling like it wasn't real. And so we were like, okay, if we tell people, maybe that will make it feel a little bit more real. And we told everybody and it was great. And that kind of hour of everybody being really elated for us and the conversation being solely around that was great. And it was everything that I had ever wanted. It was wonderful. But as soon as everybody had left, I was like, oh, I wish we'd not told him. Because in my head, it was like, okay, that's somebody else that we've got to tell when it goes wrong. And it wasn't even just that. Like, I just felt like I wanted to be in a bit of a bubble and I wanted to protect that bubble and just didn't want anybody else to come in. I didn't want anybody else to tell me how I should feel or how I should be reacting or what my body should be doing. And I think one thing I have found is, you know, everybody had an opinion on IVF, but goodness me, everybody has an opinion on what you should be doing when you're pregnant. And I was very aware of that. And I think, you know, it got to the point where we'd had our third scan. We were 9 weeks and I was just a bit like, I feel like I'm going to have to. Now, people knew that I had done IVF. I think I was sharing it, but I was sharing it at my own pace. I was really delaying it. And so there was about a 5 week delay. And I had started getting like messages from people where they were telling me that they thought they knew what the outcome was, or I wouldn't be doing this if it hadn't worked. And I was a bit like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little bit pressured now, which wasn't great. You know, 99.9% of people were really lovely and completely respected the way I was doing it. But I kind of reached a point where I thought, I've kind of got to now. Like, I don't feel like I can protect this bubble for much longer, or somebody is going to find out from somebody else and it is just going to get out that way. So in the end, I just thought, sod it, I'll share it. And it was really great. And if I'm really honest, it actually made things 5 million times easier, because I'd gone from keeping this secret and not wanting to tell people that I was feeling really anxious and that I was spending most nights crying because I was worried about this or worried about that. And once I had told people, the amount of people that had said to me, I felt like this and this is really normal and this is really normal too, and you'll do this and you'll do that. And it was really great. And I just kind of felt like a bit of a weight had been lifted and I could finally talk really openly about how I was feeling. And, you know, I completely understood that there was going to be a portion of people that followed me that was going to be too much for. But there were also a lot of people that were there that really did want to support me through this and had been there and bought the t-shirt and all the rest of it. So it definitely, I think, helped with that anxiety. And over the course of like the next couple of weeks, I did kind of start to accept it that little bit more and feel like embrace it and really think, do you know what? I'm here now. I have two options. I can either enjoy it or I can spend the next 6 months worrying and getting to the end of it and not enjoying it. And, you know, either way, I'm going to be devastated if something goes wrong. So I may as well, in my mind, just breathe through it and accept that right now I'm pregnant and right now it is great and everything is wonderful. And that was really helped by sharing and people sharing their experiences with me. So it definitely helped in a positive way, I think.
Good. It's good to hear that. Like, there's a lot there to unpick, isn't there? And there is a certain pressure, I guess. Like, I'm really sorry that people were DMing you and kind of almost, yeah, coercing you to come out with your result. Like, that's just not right.
I think people are just invested, aren't they? I think that's the thing. Like, you follow people on social media and you almost see them as your friends, don't you? And it's, sorry, there's a plane going over really low over my house right now. This always happens. But yeah, I think it's just... I think it was a mixture of people saying, oh, you know, I hope it has worked and I hope that that's why you've not shared. A mixture of people, yeah, saying things like that, but then also feeling like they were somewhat trying to perhaps protect and say a bit like, look, if you don't want people to know them, like, you've liked this and this to me says that it has worked. And, you know, and so I kind of got it, but at the same time, it did feel a little bit more pressured and like maybe I was doing it wrong and hadn't handled it right. But you're only human, aren't you? You do what you think's best. So
that's the thing, isn't it? Like, this is your personal experience, and absolutely people who share stuff on social media, you know, and I totally get that. We do we buy into people, don't we? We do feel like we know them, but there is a line, you know.
And
this is something that you are going through, and it's incredibly delicate and incredibly personal, incredibly emotional. And I know people who, you know, don't share until they've had their babies because they just, like that bubble you describe, that's exactly, they just want to keep it to that as much as possible. There's no right or wrong is the short answer, but I totally think that I know the bubble, and I also know that talking to people and, you know, hearing that validation of, yeah, I felt like that. Yeah, that was what happened to me. Yeah, you know, and I did this, this and this, you know, to help me do that. And that's, you know, so powerful. Like, that's why this podcast exists. That's why I run the support groups I do, because we like to talk to people when we're ready. But that does also come back to what you mentioned about people having an opinion on pregnancy.
Oh God, yeah.
It can get a lot. And like, the one piece, the only piece of true advice I ever give anyone is listen to everyone's advice and then take the bits that you want. And that's it. Because we're all different, aren't we? And our circumstances are all different. But yeah, people mean well.
Oh, yeah.
But 100%. It can be quite overwhelming.
Yeah, I think I had this conversation with Marco not long ago, because whenever we're kind of like discussing brands of certain things or what's better and different options that we have. He will quite often say to me, why don't you ask Instagram? And I've kind of got quite picky with that now, because I have found that, like I say, everybody has an opinion, which is totally fine. And if I ask for it, then by all means, give it to me. But I think in those first few weeks, like I remember having the NHS website, I'd read something that had said when you are being sick, like Lucozade can be a really good thing to help. So I was like, brilliant. I love Lucozade. I will stock up. And I'd put on Instagram that I was having Lucozade and it was really helping with my sickness. And somebody had messaged me, and a few people messaged me telling me that I shouldn't be drinking it in pregnancy. And obviously my mind immediately combusted. I'm obviously Googling every single thing that I look at on a menu going, can I drink this? Can I eat this? Can I eat this? And it just got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm getting so much advice here. And if I bought everything that people told me that I needed to get, I would be bankrupt. Like there is so much. I've had people tell me I need a changing table in every room. I've had other people tell me that I literally need nothing and everything is. So I just think it's personal, isn't it? And like you say, you take from it what works for you. And I am very new to this. I've never been in this situation before. I don't have any other, I'm the first of like my cousins and people like that to have a child. So I don't have that many people really to ask advice from, other than like, so I have got some friends, yes, but like parents and in-laws that haven't had kids in 30 odd years. And you think, well, things have changed since then. So I do, I ask for advice quite regularly, but I think obviously there's so much and everybody's opinion is different. And what's right for one person isn't right for another. What's right for one baby isn't right for another baby. So it is just kind of trying to navigate that. And there's some things that I get through and I think, yeah, that's far too much, like that. Absolutely not. And then there's other things where I'm like, oh, that looks like there's, yeah, maybe I need a bit more than that or something. So yeah, it's definitely fun to try and navigate and just figure out what's right for you. But obviously it's new to us. So we're constantly finding out what's right for us and what's not. And it's just trial and error, isn't it? A lot of it, I think.
Yeah. And like you make such a valid point there that every baby is different as well. You know, like we're different to each other, but the babies are all different as well. And there's no guarantee one way or another whether they're going to get this, that, the other, whether they're going to, how they're going to feed. Like it's all, you know, and you won't know that until they're in your arms and you're doing it. So,
thank God for Amazon Prime.
Oh my goodness. Honestly, as much as it irks me to completely agree, I do say that to people. I'm like, look, you know, there's a hospital bag checklist here. Anything else, Amazon Prime, you can have it same day, next day, you'll be fine. You will work it out for sure. But yeah, it is so true. You mentioned there about being sick. Now, this is something that has been ongoing, hasn't it, for you?
Yeah, it was really I read somewhere that your symptoms are quite often similar to those that your mum had and things like it can be quite genetic. How true that is, I don't know. But at the beginning, the only thing I had was backache and I would feel dizzy in the afternoon, which is like textbook copy of what my mum was like with both of us. Like, you know, with me, she was very textbook. With my sister, she didn't even know she was pregnant until like well into the second trimester. So I thought that that was it. And I'd got to like nearly 10 weeks and I was fine. And then suddenly I started being sick. To be honest, I was quite glad. I'll be really honest. It's very reassuring. And it's as much as it's not very nice in the moment. I do find it quite reassuring. And it's the only thing I have really, other than obviously my changing body at this point, but the only real reassurance I've got that I am pregnant and that something is happening in there. So yeah, but it's been like clockwork for what, 5-6 weeks now. And I'm wondering if it'll ever go away, but I'm quite lucky in that it is just about in the morning and then I'm done. Like it's not, you know, a friend of mine, she's a couple of weeks ahead of me and she has been so poorly with it. So I feel quite lucky in that sense. But yeah, I've just seen it as reassurance. And I just feel, as much as I don't enjoy, you know, having my head over a toilet first thing in the morning, at the same time, I do feel really grateful for it, which I never ever thought I would feel grateful for feeling like that. But yeah, it's reassurance at its finest.
Yeah, because it is difficult because some people don't have any symptoms.
No.
And it is like you almost want that. And then, as you say, like with your friend, some people, they have extreme pregnancy sickness or hyperemesis, which I have done an episode on. There's kind of one story that's shared within that episode that is really quite well, I guess I would give a trigger warning around it. It's really extreme, but it is a really, really great episode to listen to if that's something you're experiencing, because especially I think if you have been on a long journey, you kind of want to feel grateful. You expect to feel grateful and like, yep, I can do this. This is amazing. I'm so lucky and all of this. But sometimes it's really fucking hard as well, isn't it? You know, and you're allowed to feel grateful and in pain or upset or hating it at the same time. Like, obviously we don't want the latter, but if that is the case, if that's your reality of pregnancy, you know, you are entitled to feel like pregnancy is hard. You're entitled to feel like that.
Like a couple of weeks ago, I did start to find it quite hard because I think, like I say, it was every single morning. And at the same time, like I said to you just before we started recording, you know, that my energy has started to come back now and I'm starting to feel a little bit more like me again, whereas I've basically felt hungover for like the last 10 weeks. And so I think that was when I found it the hardest. And it was when I would wake up in the morning and feel like I had been hit by a truck. I would then, you know, straight away be ill. And then it would kind of set me up for the rest of the day. And that is how I would feel all day. And I would just feel sick and dizzy and tired. Whereas now it is very much, it's just get it out of the way, bish, bash, bosh, done, crack on. So it has been, like I say, for me, it has been really reassuring, but there was definitely a period of time where around that same time I'd had a bit of spotting and it was all kind of, that was when I was like, okay, I need to accept here that I don't have to enjoy it all the time and I can be grateful, but at the same time feel like shit and understand that I don't have to enjoy my symptoms. I can be really grateful without, you know, going, woohoo, I'm being sick and woohoo, I feel like death. Like the, I don't have to be happy about that, but I can still be happy that it's happening. You know, it's a, but I, again, I think it's quite complex. And I think you definitely feel that more when you have had a struggle to get here. Like I think anybody who fell pregnant quickly, I don't think would really bat an eyelid at saying, oh, it's horrible. Whereas I feel like I kind of censored that a little bit. And I was a little bit cautious of saying, I'm finding this really hard now, because I didn't want to upset people. I didn't want people to think I wasn't being grateful when I absolutely was, but nobody likes feeling ill. So yeah, that I think was quite hard to navigate, but it's a really understandable feeling, I think. And I think, you know, like you said, you worded it perfectly. You are allowed to feel crap. No, it's not fun. So
exactly. We have our own guilt, I think, around it. And then as you touched on there, you know, we have a survivor's guilt for people who are trying and we don't want to say it's hard or admit that we're struggling because like we're pregnant and that's amazing, you know, but it is complex. It is how we're feeling. We're allowed to feel how we feel.
Yeah, for sure.
You have recently come off your medication, haven't you?
Yes.
Your IVF meds and been discharged from your clinic. Talk to us about all of that. How's that been?
So I was discharged at 9 weeks, but I was still on a lot of medication. Like I was still on blood thinners every day. I was doing progesterone injections. I was doing a gel. I was on 12 tablets a day. It was a really heavy protocol. And so at first it kind of didn't really feel any different. Like I knew realistically, if I wanted to speak to the clinic, I could, but I'd also then obviously gone through the NHS. So it was, I was now with the NHS, sorry. So it was trying to navigate, who do I go to if I have a problem? Who do I contact? So that bit was difficult. But then at 10 weeks, a lot of my medication then stopped. And then my medication finally stopped altogether, weekend just gone. It was at 14 weeks that I had to stop. And that was odd. I had obviously done 14 weeks of medication every single day. And then to suddenly not have alarms going off 3 times a day and my body suddenly being able to do this by itself, that was the hardest bit, I think, to get over, because I am absolutely infertile. Like this will never, ever happen for me naturally on its own. I will always need medical intervention to get pregnant. And I think it took an awful lot for me to come to terms with the fact that my body couldn't do this. And I found that really difficult. So for me, I think knowing that it was up to my body to do this now was quite a big hurdle almost for me to get over emotionally. And I think I needed to really believe that I was able to do this. And I had to kind of really almost like empower myself. And, you know, I would sit and Google, and I'm not the most, I can't think what the word I'm looking for is, but I'm not the type of person that will look for affirmations and things like that. Like I just kind of crack on with things and deal with them in my own way. But I really felt like I had to with that. And I kind of spent the weekend like Googling how to kind of almost train your mind into believing that you can do this and really believing that I was capable of. And it did, it really helped in saying those things out loud and saying, you know, I am capable, my body is capable, my body was made to do this, all different things like that really did help me. And I think I have kind of now, you know, I'm a week into no medication. It is lovely. It's so much cleaner and nice. And I don't feel like I could rattle when I walk, but it has taken a little bit of getting used to. And it is still like, I do sit there at like 7:30 at night and think, I've forgotten something. What have I forgotten? And it is just because I'm out of that routine of doing my medication. So yeah, it was definitely scary, but now I find it quite exciting and I feel quite happy and quite relaxed. And I do believe I can do this. I absolutely, you know, I've always said, I feel like I was made to do this and I might have needed a little bit of help getting here. I might've needed a lot of help getting here, but now I'm here and I can do it and I know I can do it. So it's just really trying to remind myself of that all the time, literally all the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And someone in one of my support groups said, they described it so perfectly, I felt like. And it was like riding a bike and then taking the stabilizers off.
Yes, you know? I love
and
that.
It's a bit wobbly to start with. And you're kind of like, can I do this? Can I do this? And before you know it, you are whizzing around the park, having a whale of a time, you know, like feet off the pedals, just like, yes, I'm doing this. And I'm
love
brilliant.
That. That's really great. I think it's just, it is, it's such a contrast as well. Like I think going from, obviously, we've been through private clinics and the clinic that we were with is a private clinic, but obviously the NHS paid for it. And I think you see the difference with going through a fertility clinic and then being discharged to the NHS. And, you know, for the most part, they've been great. Like my midwife, everything else, they're great, but they had forgotten to refer me. So despite the fact I'd registered with their antenatal unit at like 5 weeks or whatever it was, I was a bit eager. I had my booking appointment and I was told that my scan would be like, my letter was in the post and it was booked. Anyway, I never received this letter and I rang them and they were like, oh no, we've not got anything for you. Like you've not been referred for the scan. So immediately I'm like, okay, this isn't good enough. What do I do now? And it was all sorted and everything was good and dandy and everything's booked now. But you immediately see that difference where, you know, everybody is readily available at your fingertips and any concerns that you have immediately, you've got an answer. And, you know, I had like an online portal where I could speak to my nurses at any time and you could ring a number, an out of hours number. And obviously you have the maternity helplines and things like this, but I just automatically feel with the NHS, I almost feel a bit cautious to ask questions because you don't want to be a time waster and you don't want to feel like you're just worrying over nothing. And luckily we haven't had anything that has required a phone call, but even things like that, like not getting your scan through on time, and it is worlds apart from the two different things. And I think when you're anxious anyway, because you've been through IVF, obviously that isn't then taken into consideration when you're then back on the NHS. And I think that contrast of going through somebody who has really struggled and professionals being really aware of that and really empathetic to that, to suddenly you're just like everybody else. And the fact that it's an IVF pregnancy means nothing. And that was really quite odd and quite, I don't know, I feel relieved that I'm now kind of just like everybody else, and that's great, and that people don't look at me and automatically think, oh, she's struggled. Like there's none of that. I'm just like everybody else, but at the same time I've not been for so long. I'm like, huh, where do I fit into this? Like it's really strange, and just trying to navigate it all is wild. Like I still feel that urge to go, oh, it was IVF. Like I feel like people need to know, but they absolutely don't need to know. Like it's just very strange. very strange indeed, going from one to the other.
I do hear it, like, you know, over the years, I've heard it so many times. You don't feel like, you want to feel normal, but at the same time, you kind of don't feel normal. And it is, you know, it's overwhelming because we have never, or in my personal experience, and it sounds, you know, like I know from lots of people that you don't look up, do you? You don't think, oh, you don't know, what's a booking appointment? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, when do I get the scans? Who do I tell? What do I do? How many appointments am I going to have? Like what happens, you know, because you've been so frightened, petrified to even consider the fact that you might be there one day. And it is really hard. And I hope by having conversations like this, people will recognize that they're not alone in that.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I have the podcast, that I run the Hangout membership, is so that we can kind of share that information in a safe place, you know,
yeah,
where you
absolutely
feel understood, because other people kind of look at you sometimes and think like, what are you talking about? Like, why don't you know this? Like, you're fixed. If, you know, if they know your history, you're fixed. You know, what's the problem? Just crack on. And it's like, hang on a minute. I just, one day at a time.
I think I'm really coming to terms with the fact that, you know, like I said, you know, my infertility is never going to go away. Like, right now it's over and right now it's done. And I feel like for the first time in 7 years, I can breathe. But it had become my life in every way, shape or form, you know, similar to you, I'd kind of made it. It was my social media and I had too. I was running support groups and doing certain memberships and the campaign and my blogging and everything. Everything was dominated by IVF. That now it's a bit like, okay, so where do I fit now? What do I do? And how do you navigate this? And I think people do, people see it as a, you're fixed, like that's it, you're done. But it isn't going to go anywhere. And while right now it's over, and I really feel like I can finally breathe again, like I did feel really suffocated by it, I also feel like already you have to think, you know, we are never going to be able to have that conversation of, oh, should we have another? And just spontaneously do it. Already we have had the conversation of, okay, so if we decide to have another, we think it's going to take us this long to save the money. And so realistically, we're going to be looking at around this time. It's conversations like that, that again, inverted commas, but normal people don't have to have. And so that I think is the bit where people assume that because you've had a child, all that goes away, but it's traumatic. And I have a real love-hate relationship with the word trauma, and I think it's difficult, but there's a lot of things that do go on within infertility and IVF that is a trauma, and it is really, it stays with you. And it is that constant feeling of it's not going to work or something is going to go wrong because it has gone wrong so many times before that people do. People think you get those two lines on the test and all of that goes away. But I have had 7 years of disappointment and hurt and medical intervention and everything else that has come with that. It seems really unrealistic to think that I can do this and that I am here. And I think it's unfair that people think that all of that just disappears when actually, you know, I had to have a lot of therapy at one point and things like this. And I think so those feelings aren't just going to vanish. You're not just fixed. It doesn't just work like that. You know, it's mad. So, you know, if you go through childhood trauma, as soon as your childhood is over, does that go away? Like, of course it doesn't. There's certain bits that follow you around and linger their way into different bits of your life. And I think it's exactly the same with infertility. I don't think it is just over.
No, it absolutely leaves its legacy. And like you say, you know, kind of, you're still infertile. You know, that hasn't gone away because you're pregnant, you know, and I feel almost accusatory saying that. I am too, like we're here together. But you know, like one is still infertile, even though we're pregnant, you know? So it's not just a legacy, it's our truth. It's who we are. And that isn't going to go away at any point. But the focus today, now, is not that, hopefully. And if that is that for you, and I saw a counsellor during my pregnancy, I advocate kind of seeing counsellors as much as we can afford to or need to or fit it in or, you know, all of that. But yeah, today you are pregnant and that absolutely. Is just bloody wonderful,
it
Amber.
Is. It's really cool. And I think it's just like I say, it's taken a lot to get my head around now, but it's, you know, I'm starting to see a little bump and you see the changes and my boobs are suddenly bigger than they've ever been in my life. And my husband's having a whale of a time with that. And I think it's so much has changed now and I can see those changes. And, you know, he came home from work last night and I gave him a hug and he was like, oh, I can feel it. He was like, there's something there. And it is now you're starting to see those changes. And, you know, it's one thing seeing the scan and, you know, it is the most amazing thing. And something I will never, ever believe I've managed to do. And it's so, so great. But you're seeing it on a screen, whereas seeing those changes to your actual body, that for me is the realization that this is happening. Like it is, I'm not just dreaming it. Like it's, I find it really weird that you're like nearly halfway through by the time you actually start to see all these changes, but it is so crazy. And I find myself being one of those people that I would moan about all the time where I've just constantly got my hands on my bump and it's just, it's everything. It is really, really amazing. And I honestly feel like I have never been this happy in my life. And that is really something. So it's great. Really, really great. And I'm so grateful that it worked. All my like doctors and nurses, they are angels. And I obviously wouldn't be here without them. So it's just amazing.
Amazing. Thank you. It's so wonderful to hear like that joy. It really, really is. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you sharing your story. And I know that I will be following your story, as will so many of our listeners. If they weren't before, they can find you at
amber.itso.
Itso.
Yeah. Like pizza. IZZO.
Lovely. And you've got a YouTube channel. All of the information, all of the links will be in the show notes as well. And yeah, just thank you.
Thank you. It's been really, really good talking to you. Aww. So thank you for having me.
You're very, very welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye. See you later.